Everyone, did you know right now there are over 220 premium weekly bonus episodes of Invisible Choir available on Invisible Choir Plus on Patreon and Apple Podcasts? Yeah, we've actually been releasing a weekly bonus episode nearly every single week since we launched in July of 2019. So if you didn't know, now you know. For just $5 per month, you can get early ad-free access to free regular episodes and immediate access to our entire back catalog of over 220 weekly bonus episodes. That's it. That's the pitch. Now, we recently added Invisible Choir Plus to Apple Podcasts, which seems to be confusing a lot of people and, frankly, has led to a lot of negative reviews, when in reality, nothing has changed with our production schedule. Nothing. Nada. In fact, the same free regular episodes come out every 2 weeks. Only our listeners on Apple can now see all of the incredible bonus content we've been offering since day one. Mind you, with no unexpected delays in production due to the pandemic, and without increasing the price of the subscription a single time. So, if you at all enjoy Invisible Choir, please, please, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple or wherever you listen, because, well, it matters. Thank you all so much for listening. Now, on with the show.
Reach Freaks. Invisible Choir explores detailed depictions of violence and murder and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
This sister that I will remember every day all my life, that keep me broken heart.
Ah, Valentine's Day. One of the many days of the year where corporations profit off the collective guilt of Americans, while we as a society attempt to prove how much we care about people through the act of meaningless spending. You know, love and all that. Of course, in an ideal world, we should show our partners and significant others alike that we love them each and every day, not just when Walmart or Target tells us to. But I digress, and while I say this all in half jest regarding the mainstream holiday being a bit cheesy, I think we can all agree it's usually a relatively positive day. Unless you're part of the Single Hearts Club, I suppose. Nevertheless, Valentine's Day is generally harmless. But what happened back in 2017 may well be the most cold-hearted act ever committed during this so-called holiday for hearts and love. On the evening of February 14th, Valentine's Day of 2017, home security footage from two different camera angles recorded 35-year-old Ellie Tran as she arrived home from work. In the video, she can be seen pulling into the driveway to her residence located in the 1900 block of Steel Metal Court in Virginia Beach. Tran then exits her Toyota, appearing to be preoccupied with shopping bags that filled her hands. Just past 8 p.m., she's then seen making her way toward the front door, when suddenly a man comes into the camera's field of view, effectively running up behind her. It's hard to make out a face from the CCTV image, but the male individual is seen wearing some kind of bright reflective vest. As soon as Ellie Tran noticed the man, she immediately ran for her life. But before she could make it to her door, she fell to the concrete of her walkway. The man is then seen standing over Tran, but what isn't captured on video is the downward stabbing motion he's making toward her upper leg. He then immediately gets up and begins to run away, but stumbles into a large bush in the yard before finally fleeing the scene on foot. Ellie Tran is then seen on CCTV, and she gets to her feet and immediately begins jumping up and down in panic. The second camera then shows her opening her front door as she calls out to her mother and father, who were both inside with her 2-year-old daughter. while there was no audio captured in the video. According to the victim's mother, Ellie cried out,
"Merlino stuck something in my leg. I don't know what Merlino stringed in my leg. It hurts so bad, it's numb. It hurts so bad, it's numb."
When Ellie's mother met her outside to see what was the matter, the two were seen on surveillance video standing next to one another, looking around in a state of confusion. Ellie's mother then produces her cell phone there on the walkway as she proceeds to call for an ambulance. Ellie Tran looks to be unaware of what exactly had just happened. She's then seen for the last time on CCTV, running into her home where she called 911 herself. Moments later, Ellie told her mother that she felt ill and that she was going to faint. A few seconds after that, she collapsed to the floor and began foaming at the mouth. When EMS arrived on scene, Ellie Tran was found unresponsive and was no longer breathing. She was immediately rushed to the hospital, where she was listed in critical condition. 35-year-old Ellie Tran was placed on an emergency ventilator as her life hung in the balance at Sentara Princess Anne Hospital. However, her condition declined rapidly. While the doctors struggled to determine the cause of her condition, she was beyond help, and after several hours of being in the hospital, Ellie Tran was deemed clinically brain dead, with no hope of saving the young mother's life. Police learned that the name Ellie Tran cried out just minutes before she lost consciousness was that of her estranged husband and the father of their 2-year-old daughter, a 29-year-old man named Joseph Vincent Merlino III, not to be confused with the infamous Philadelphia mobster of the same name. While Ellie remained on life support in what some would call a vegetative state, authorities managed to track down Joseph Merlino to Victoria, Virginia, in Lunenburg County, which is about 150 miles west of where the crime actually occurred. Merlino was taken into custody at his brother's house that night on Wednesday, February 15, 2017, roughly 24 hours after Ellie Tran was attacked in her driveway. At around 10 a.m. the following morning, with search warrants in hand, investigators arrived at Joseph Merlino's Virginia Beach home, located at 1296 Warner Hall Drive. After interviewing several witnesses, including neighbors and Ellie Tran's own mother, at least three of them pinpointed Joseph Merlino as the man who was caught on surveillance video after seeing the footage.
I saw a lady running. She was screaming, running into the house. It's sad. I didn't think it was something like that.
Ellie Tran's mother was from Vietnam and didn't speak English, but with the help of a translator, she was able to inform police that Ellie had recently installed security cameras both inside and outside of her home for one reason, her ex, Joseph Merlino. She told authorities that he was dangerous and that he'd attacked her before. She then explained that Ellie was afraid he would one day do it again. Authorities spent roughly 7 hours at Merlino's property the day of the search, which was only about 7 miles from Ellie's home where the attack took place. Armored vehicles, the fire marshal, SWAT, Virginia Beach Special Operations, and more drew attention to this previously quiet neighborhood as officers in hazmat suits carefully walked the perimeter of Merlino's residence. Having been well informed that Ellie Tran suffered brain failure due to some kind of deliberate and lethal poisoning, law enforcement took great caution by sending an explosive disposal robot into the home first. As crowds continued to grow that afternoon, the home was eventually deemed safe for law enforcement to enter. Meanwhile, across town, those who lived close to the victim spoke with the media as they tried to make sense of just how and why this bizarre crime had occurred.
I don't know where this person parked and how he got out of here so fast, but he did. But I was like, oh my God, I just don't believe this happened. I really don't. Oh.
My action is, oh my God, I hope everything's okay. And I tried to get information, but of course, no one's giving me any information.
Police later revealed that they had in fact discovered chemicals inside at Joseph Merlino's home, only they wouldn't elaborate further.
I'm just glad that he was caught.
Yeah.
And everything, yeah. And that he's behind bars and he can't do it to anybody else.
While crime scene units were carefully removing evidence from the suspect's home, the victim's family was just a few miles away at the hospital. They eventually made the difficult decision to take Ellie Tran off of life support. And less than 48 hours after the bizarre attack, the 35-year-old mother was officially pronounced dead on February 16th, 2017.
Good evening. Crime tape still surrounds the husband's home here behind me as Virginia Beach police guard the front of the home. They're also out back. Like you mentioned, that husband is locked up tonight, but the medical examiner's office remains very tight-lipped about how his wife died.
Following his estranged wife's mysterious death, Joseph Merlino was officially charged with second-degree murder and was to remain at the Virginia Beach Correctional Center until he saw his eventual day in court. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you do with an extra hour in your day? Look, a lot of us spend our entire lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If that's a question you have trouble answering, well, then you might need a little guidance or help finding out what matters to you. And look, therapy is one of the ways to help put you on the path towards prioritizing things that matter. And for me, that's been mitigating stress. And I've been a proponent of therapy for years. In fact, I don't even know where I'd be without it. And frankly, I don't know that I'd have the coping skills to be here today. Seriously, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. So learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/invisiblechoir today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/invisiblechoir. This episode is also proudly sponsored by Rocket Money. You know, I've been using Rocket Money now for probably over a year, and it continues to amaze me. So here's what happened. I recently got a bill increase alert from Rocket Money, alerting me that one of my insurance premiums was going up, and going up considerably. So it wasn't my insurance agent, it wasn't the company itself sending me advance notice, though they hit it at the bottom of some emails after I went back and looked. It was Rocket Money, alerting me that I had an opportunity to make a change, and so that's what I did, saving hundreds of dollars per year on all of my insurance. But what is it? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. And I get those bill increase alerts anytime one of my recurring expenses goes up unexpectedly. And they're trusted by literally millions. In fact, Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/invisible. That's rocketmoney.com/invisible. rocketmoney.com/invisible. Ellie Tran was one of six children, born to her mother and father in the city of Hue, located in central Vietnam. Her mother described Ellie as golden because of the bright and cheery way in which she carried herself from childhood and into her adult years. Around the time she turned 25, Ellie chose to move to the United States in search of better opportunities. She settled in North Carolina and eventually met her first husband. However, after the marriage failed to work out, Ellie decided to relocate to Virginia Beach, where she gained employment working at a local nail salon. Years later, while attending a friend's wedding, Ellie was introduced to a man by a mutual acquaintance. That man was Joseph Merlino. Ellie and Joseph spent the evening chatting, exchanging information, and before long, they were officially dating. Ellie later moved into Joseph's place, and before they knew it, they were married and Ellie was pregnant with their firstborn daughter in 2014. The young mother-to-be was ecstatic. Ellie immediately phoned her parents back in Vietnam when she learned the good news, and the soon-to-be grandparents were just as excited, so much so that the decision was ultimately made to have them all come to America to ensure they would be a part of the child's life, and to help them care for the new baby. Ellie's mother and father wasted no time and were soon on a one-way flight to Virginia Beach. The two then moved in with Ellie and her husband Joseph, with plans to help their daughter throughout the pregnancy and to reside there long-term after the baby was born. Ellie's father was 70 years old. Dad did what he could to chip in by working part-time at a local kitchen, but Ellie was the main financial support for her parents. After the baby was born, Ellie's mother, who was in her late 60s, looked after the child most of the time. That's because Ellie herself had two jobs, working at two different salons, one in Virginia Beach and one in the nearby city of Norfolk. At the time, her husband, Joseph Merlino, owned and operated a small cell phone repair business across town in Oceanfront, Virginia. However, it's unclear how much money this business actually generated. In short, Ellie Tran was the principal provider, not only for her parents and her child, but also for her husband, Joseph Merlino. She worked overtime to pay the mortgage, health insurance, as well as the lion's share of the family's bills. Despite pulling double duty at work, Ellie somehow managed to take on the household chores as well, not to mention doing all of this while remaining an attentive and devoted mother to her newborn daughter. Over time, Ellie and Joseph's relationship began to deteriorate, perhaps feeling emasculated by his wife's work ethic and the fact that she was the breadwinner of the house. Joseph became bitter, controlling, and eventually violent. According to Ellie's mother, Joseph Merlino didn't get along with either of her parents. He fought with his wife just as he did with the grandparents to their newborn daughter. The general atmosphere in the home, one that was volatile and contentious, to say the least. Ellie, as a woman of traditional values, tried her best to make the marriage work. But in the summer of 2016, heated arguments escalated to new heights, when Merlino was arrested and charged with assault following a domestic violence incident. As a result, Ellie filed an emergency protection order in July of that year. The following is an excerpt from that restraining order, written in Ellie Tran's own words.
"My boyfriend scared me. He told me he will put me under the ground behind his house. Last week, the respondent pulled me down onto the mattress and restrained my hands and feet until I could not move. He turned me upside down, around, until I felt very dizzy in front of my daughter. My daughter was scared, and I was crying. He gets upset very easily. He told me he would pay for a judge to have a full custody of our daughter. He hurts me and makes statements that I will have no proof to prove what he does."
It was around the same time when Ellie decided to relocate to the residence on Still Metal Court in Virginia Beach. She packed her things and moved her daughter and parents out of Merlino's home and in with her at their new home. Joseph Merlino was subsequently released from jail following that assault and was ordered to pay a $1,000 fine. According to the victim's mother, one of the first things Ellie did was install the security system on their new home. She said that Merlino would often try to break in and would follow her daughter home from work. Roughly 2 months before the murder, Ellie Tran was leaving the salon at around 7 p.m. the evening of December 4th, 2016, when a man abruptly backed into her car in the parking lot. Before Ellie could even react, the man, who was seen wearing a wig and women's clothing, then exited his vehicle. He then approached Ellie's car and threw some kind of chemical directly in her face. Luckily, Ellie's reflexes were fast enough to block the liquid from actually hitting her skin. However, the caustic substance effectively burnt some of her hair right before the man took off running. Witnesses also claim that the man dressed in women's clothing may have tried to inject Ellie after throwing the acid during this incident, only he failed. And while much of the details surrounding this assault are still unclear, this very well may have been Merlino's first attempt at killing his wife by administering some type of poisoning. Ellie Tran was ultimately admitted to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries following this event. She informed the staff that she was certain it was her estranged husband, Joseph Merlino, who had done this, and also reported the same to police. The entire event was also captured on surveillance video, The footage from outside the nail salon was eventually taken as evidence by the authorities. However, Joseph Merlino was never charged for the assault. Undoubtedly, now in fear for what he might do if she did decide to take further legal action, Ellie Tran chose not to. She also withdrew the original protection order against her estranged husband on December 6, 2016, just 2 days after surviving the acid attack. Ellie Tran celebrated her 35th birthday with her parents and daughter at their new Virginia Beach home on February 12, 2017. 2 days later, she was killed. On behalf of the child's grandparents, a GoFundMe was created. With Ellie now gone, her elderly parents were at a loss, not just emotionally, but in almost every other sense of the word as well. They were both still very new to the country, having just relocated to the U.S. a few months before. Going off information provided in the crowdfunding campaign's description, Ellie Tran's family was in dire need of any assistance they could get.
Ellie Tran was a victim from an assault this past Valentine's Day. She passed away yesterday, leaving behind a 2-year-old daughter and 2 old parents. She was the only one who worked to take care of her 2-year-old daughter and her parents. Her parents also just came to U.S. and they do not speak English and not working. At this moment, they do not know who to reach or help because they barely have nothing and any money to take care of the cost of the funeral. Also, how to take care of their granddaughter in the future. I'm here to ask everyone for your generosity. Open up your heart to help out the Trans family through this hard time and to financial hardship with your kindness and donation. Sincerely, may God bless you all.
In the days following her bizarre and untimely death, Ellie Tran's 2-year-old daughter cried out the word mommy anytime someone came to their front door. The child was far too young to understand that her mother was never coming home, and yet old enough to utter 3 heartbreaking words to her grandparents on various occasions.
Mommy is sleeping?
While awaiting the results of the autopsy, friends, family, and co-workers of Tran took to the streets outside of a Virginia Beach courthouse, protesting aloud for no bond for Ellie's alleged killer during his initial court appearance.
See, young and beautiful, always my, see, friendly.
Ellie could be anyone, could be our sister, our daughter, our friends, could be anyone. My feeling about this thing is that I think the system failed her. She reported to the police. Somehow, it wasn't able to protect her.
Ellie's loved ones were seen holding signs with a photograph of her 2-year-old daughter, alongside a caption that read, "Justice for my mom. She was murdered." A large group of supporters spoke openly to the media that day about their overall frustrations with the criminal justice system, questioning why law enforcement allowed Joseph Merlino's violent trends to escalate to this now alleged murder. One of Ellie's co-workers from the salon also spoke to local reporters. She told them just how afraid Ellie actually was of Merlino, explaining how they would often walk together to Ellie's car after work to ensure her safety. According to those who knew her, Ellie lived in a constant state of fear leading up to her death, anticipating nearly every single day that something terrible was going to happen to her.
She always scared. Anytime she, after work, she, I and her always go outside. I always go with her.
According to Ellie's friends, she would also call them in the middle of the night, so afraid that Merlino would show up at her home that she often wouldn't sleep. Merlino's attorney withdrew their request to proceed with the bond hearing, and so it was ultimately delayed. The following day, Ellie Tran was laid to rest on Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. Services were held at the Family Choice Funerals and Cremations, followed by a prayer reading at Ellie's church, the Dong Hung Buddhist Temple in Virginia Beach. When it came time for Merlino's next day in court, roughly 1 month later, his attorneys maintained that their client was innocent. They argued that Merlino couldn't have killed Ellie Tran due to the fact that he was some 3 hours away visiting his brother at the time the murder took place. At his eventual bond hearing, the defense claimed that Joseph Merlino left Virginia Beach for Western Virginia on Sunday, February 12th, 2 full days before Ellie was killed. Witness testimony provided from a neighbor of the defendant's brother also confirmed that he was in fact there at this time. In addition, the defense noted that Joseph Merlino had apparently struck a deer on his way to Western Virginia, and that the accident disabled his car in some capacity. In short, his lawyers argued that he couldn't possibly have driven 150 miles to commit a murder in Virginia Beach based on the condition of his vehicle, as well as their provided timeline. The prosecution, however, viewed the order of events a bit differently and provided a substantial amount of evidence that had yet to be revealed at this point, including a possible motive. The state confirmed that the results of Ellie Tran's autopsy proved that she was in fact poisoned, specifically from a lethal dose of cyanide. Prosecutors also established that Joseph Merlino and Ellie Tran were in a heated custody battle over their 2-year-old daughter at the time Ellie was murdered. The state presented documentation which showed a court date regarding that custody dispute, one which had been scheduled for March of that very year, scheduling of which took place just a few weeks before Ellie Tran was killed. The prosecution also revealed the items discovered during the execution of those search warrants. During the initial search of Merlino's home, police confiscated several SD cards, in addition to firearms, ammunition, a pair of sneakers, a gas mask, and several blue plastic containers, each holding various chemicals and liquids. While there was no cyanide present in any of the containers, the state alleged that some of the chemicals were consistent with materials used to make homemade bombs. Inside of the suspect's vehicle, an additional gas mask was also found. When authorities raided Merlino's cell phone store, they found several more items of evidentiary value. And after sifting through boxes of knockoff iPhone cases and fake OtterBoxes, authorities recovered paperwork, more electronics including hard drives, computers, tablets, and even recording devices. They also found even more plastic containers at the suspect's business, some of which contained a white powdered substance as opposed to a liquid. The defense argued that all of the chemicals found at both Merlino's home and businesses were purchased legally, and that none contained any cyanide. Aside from the surveillance footage capturing the entire attack on video, another key piece of evidence taken from the victim's home was Ellie Tran's personal journal. Inside of it were several of her writings, documenting both the previous attacks and threats made by her estranged husband, further establishing her fear that Joseph Merlino would one day kill her. At the bond hearing, it was also revealed that Merlino curiously began liquidating all of his assets around the time of the murder. And as if all of the previously mentioned evidence weren't enough for a judge to keep this man behind bars, the state revealed even more damning evidence. It turns out, not only did the defendant book a flight to China, one which was scheduled to leave abruptly after the murder, but he also had a new fiancé there waiting for him. The defense argued that the purchase of the flight was not booked as an effort to flee the country, and that Merlino was not a flight risk. Instead, they argued that the flight was purchased for a business meeting. They also claimed Joseph Merlino had planned to meet a supplier in China for the purpose of buying more product for his cell phone repair store. Needless to say, Mr. Merlino wasn't going anywhere anytime soon, and his bond was effectively denied. Merlino's defense attorney, the same man who had represented him during that 2016 domestic violence case before Ellie Tran dropped the charges, briefly addressed the media that day outside of the courthouse.
Mr. Merlino is a successful businessman, and he cared very much about the mother to his child and his child. And it is heartbreaking. This was not a case that involved explosives. we heard in court that this is a case that involved cyanide. And my understanding is none of that was found in his home.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Robody. All right, so I recently did kind of a check-in on my New Year's resolutions this year. One of my goals is to keep my weight under a certain limit. And as one might guess, about 3.5 months into the year, I'm up about 10 pounds. So I got to do something to get back to around my goal weight. And that has been my unfortunate experience with weight gain since I turned about 30, is that it's been a vicious cycle. I'll lose some weight, I gain a little bit back, lose a little more, gain some back. It's like a yo-yo. I just really struggle to keep the weight off. But what if you could take a weekly shot to not only lose weight, but to keep it off? Ro provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. And the Ro Body program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average. And the best part is you can actually keep the weight off. In fact, over 200,000 people have already chosen Ro to help them lose weight. And with the Ro Body program, members have support through the entire process. Ro's partner handles all of the insurance paperwork to help get medication covered. And if you're eligible for medication, patients have access to their provider on demand for any questions you might have. And the best part is you can sign up online from the comfort of your own home, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the office, and no waiting rooms. So sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. An average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. To get started, go to ro.co/invisible. That's ro.co/invisible. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and for providing us with free samples. All right, so I'm going to admit something right now. We get a lot of negative reviews for the way that I breathe, or according to a lot of you, the way that I don't breathe. But here's what's going on behind the scenes, okay? I have a deviated septum and terrible seasonal allergies, which makes it extremely difficult to breathe during allergy season. So depending upon the time of the year, I'm congested about 50 to 80% of every single day, which really stinks. And frankly, this is the thing I'm most self-conscious of when recording. That's why I've started using Astapro. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray, and it starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Seriously, I started using it now about 3 weeks ago, and I get pretty much full relief within about 40 minutes, so it's quick. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. So for me, I take it in the morning, and I forget about my symptoms for the rest of the day. But that's not all. Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. That's it. And within about 30 minutes, I can breathe through both nostrils. That is why I love Astapro. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. In the months leading up to the trial, Joseph Merlino went on a 79-day hunger strike while behind bars, resulting in over 40 pounds of weight loss. As it pertained to the murder of his estranged wife, the aggravating factors certainly suggested that a capital punishment case could have been pursued. Ironically enough, cyanide gas was the very chemical used to uphold the conviction of death row inmates for nearly 100 years. And while Virginia is one of 23 states to have since abolished the death penalty back in 2021, the state did not choose to go this route at the time this case was prosecuted. Instead, as a result of a hearing held on Tuesday, September 5th, 2017, Joseph Merlino's charges were upgraded from second-degree murder to first-degree. There would be no eye for an eye in this case either, and the victim's family would have to settle for a hopeful life sentence for LA Trans alleged killer Joseph Merlino. His murder trial finally began over a year and a half after his initial arrest in June of 2018. On day one, the defendant entered the courtroom looking extremely malnourished and physically frail. His cheekbones were visibly defined and poking through his sunken face, which was in stark contrast to the slightly chubbier, more well-fed Merlino the court had witnessed during his first court appearance several months before. One of the first things to occur once the jurors were settled was an outburst from the defendant, expressing his general dissatisfaction with his current legal representation. The defense then proceeded to ask the judge for a continuance. However, their request to delay the proceedings was ultimately denied. Very early on into the trial, the jury was also presented with the overwhelming CCTV evidence the evening Ellie Tran was injected with poison in her own driveway on Valentine's Day in 2017. The state alleged that the man seen on video attacking Tran was in fact the defendant in the courtroom that day, Joseph Merlino. They then went on to allege that he had done so with a syringe filled with cyanide. The prosecution also argued that Merlino knew where Ellie lived, that he was aware of the security cameras installed at her home, and that he had purchased a reflective vest for the sole purpose of distorting the camera's infrared image the night of the murder. The jury also heard the 911 calls. In one of the recordings, Ellie Tran could be heard painfully exclaiming the phrase, "Somebody shot me," just moments before she lost consciousness inside of her home. Once the audio finished playing aloud in the courtroom, the defense noted that Joseph Merlino's name was never once mentioned on the calls, and that the victim had not positively identified him as the killer in either 911 recording. Ellie Tran's mother also took the stand but became too overwhelmed with emotion, recalling the tragic events, and subsequently exited the courtroom in tears. The reason why the prosecution appeared so confident in saying the instrument used in the killing was in fact a syringe filled with cyanide came from one particular key witness, along with physical and digital evidence. A woman from New Hampshire soon took the stand, testifying on behalf of the state. This individual told the court that she owned an e-commerce store on the popular website Etsy. She went on to say that in January of 2017, she sold an antique steel syringe online for a total of $68 and subsequently shipped it to the buyer, who provided her with a Virginia Beach address. That address was 665 Newton Road. It was also revealed in court that 665 Newton Road is actually the address of a pizza shop named Mini Italia New York Pizzeria. The owner of Mini Italia New York Pizzeria also took the stand at trial and told the court that not only did the defendant, Joseph Merlino, eat at that very pizza shop every day in January of 2017, but that she'd also witnessed him retrieve a package from her business that same month, shortly after it had been delivered. Speaking of pizza, the court heard even more testimony indicating that Merlino had once bragged to a fellow inmate while in jail about hiring a hitman, which he covertly referred to as, quote, ordering a pizza. Meanwhile, the defense maintained that Joseph Merlino was an innocent man, reiterating that he was clear on the other side of the state when Ellie Tran was killed. Merlino's attorneys also presented cell phone records to support this theory, which did in fact show that Merlino's device was in Victoria, Virginia, as he had claimed when the crime occurred, over 100 miles away. There was just one problem. Even though Merlino's cell phone pinged on the other side of the state during the time frame in question, it hadn't actually shown any activity in the 22 hours before the murder. The prosecution presented their version of the same cell phone records, which they claimed showed Merlino had stopped using his phone about 3 hours before Ellie was killed, and that it did not resume any activity until the following day on February 15th at around 7 a.m. Despite this evidence, the defendant's brother, the man Merlino was supposedly with when the murder occurred, also testified for the defense. Under oath, the defendant's brother doubled down, claiming that Joseph Merlino was with him the night the murder occurred in Western Virginia, until just past 9 p.m. As we already know, Ellie Tran was killed sometime around 8 o'clock, Therefore, in the eyes of the state, this witness was merely lying on the stand to protect his own brother from a lifetime behind bars. Merlino's brother also went on to say that his brother hit a deer that night, explaining that it had partially wrecked his car and caused it to overheat. Merlino's brother then went on to say that they both walked to the brother's house after hitting the deer to get antifreeze. Only piling more proverbial dirt onto the existing mountain of evidence, seemingly against Joseph Merlino. A digital forensics expert with the Virginia Beach Police also took the stand. The expert testified to Merlino's Google searches, which were conducted in the weeks leading up to his estranged wife's death.
Gas mask with filter, cyanide gas, metal syringes, syringe hypodermic needle, stainless steel. What if cyanide gets in bloodstream? What if cyanide gets injected? How many milligrams of cyanide will kill you?
Yikes, it's going to be a little hard to explain those, Joseph. These keywords and more were discovered upon a hard drive extraction of Joseph Merlino's MacBook computer. And despite Merlino's internet search history, his defense argued that there was no cyanide ever found and that there was no linking Merlino to the purchase of cyanide anywhere through any record, which was true. And while the prosecution was unable to present evidence of just how Joseph Merlino allegedly obtained the cyanide that inevitably killed Ellie Tran, they did call a University of Virginia doctor to the stand. The doctor explained that Ellie Tran more than likely suffered an extremely painful death, according to the acute levels of cyanide found in her system. Cyanide is typically found in one of two forms, crystal or powder. However, the doctor went on to explain to the jury that cyanide could also be transformed into a liquid without much difficulty. In further exploration of the chemicals that were found at the defendant's home and business, Virginia Beach attorney Roger Griffin testified on behalf of Merlino's landlord, aka the man who owned the building his cell phone store was in. According to the building's owner, when a construction team was in the process of remodeling and preparing for a new tenant following Joseph Merlino's arrest, a bottle of clear liquid fell from a pile of insulation. The insulation had been taken out of the wall, and while on the way to the dumpster, the bottle broke and its contents spilled onto the floor. It was obvious that someone had previously hidden the bottle behind the drywall. Given the fact that they were all well aware that the prior tenant was already behind bars at the time for allegedly killing his wife via cyanide poisoning, the workers quickly got the hell out of there and called the police. The fire official who conducted the initial test of the substance found in the cell phone store ultimately determined that it was some form of dimethyl sulfoxide, otherwise known as DMSO. This chemical is both colorless and odorless. It's also inexpensive and can be purchased in the United States as a solvent. However, its medical use is restricted by the FDA. In its medicinal form, DMSO is commonly used in palliative treatment for temporary pain relief of patients with arthritis. It can also be prescribed for conditions such as bladder inflammation. More importantly, as it relates to this case, DMSO can also be used to speed up the absorption of other drugs through the skin's pores and into the bloodstream. For example, cyanide. When Dr. Rose, the director of the Virginia Poison Center, took the stand, the state explicitly asked whether DMSO could be used to expedite cyanide poisoning, to which Dr. Rose responded that it could, also explaining that the chemical is so lethal on its own that it may serve an unnecessary step in the process. With that said, there was also information online suggesting a correlation between the two drugs and that the combination of DMSO and cyanide has previously been referred to as, quote, liquid death, by various sources. How Joseph Merlino allegedly obtained the cyanide remains unknown, or at least that information has never been made public for obvious reasons. However, one expert who testified for the state did mention that cyanide could be found in some commercial jewelry cleaners and polishes, not in the United States, but in Asia. Regardless of its origin, It's very possible that mixing cyanide with DMSO was Merlino's way of turning the poison into a liquid so that he could more easily administer the dosage via that vintage steel syringe he purchased off Etsy. The prosecution also presented evidence of Merlino's attempt to remain cryptic, both before and after the murder. Jeannie Anderson, an FBI codebreaker at Quantico, testified on behalf of the state regarding the process of deciphering letters Merlino had written from jail. These letters consisted of symbols and numbers, reminiscent of the works of a less convincing Zodiac killer, if you will. Merlino's writings were found under his mattress and were ultimately seized by the sheriff's department before they could be delivered to both Merlino's mother in Virginia and the defendant's new fiancé in China. On the stand, specialist Jeannie Anderson told the court that after the letters had landed on her desk, she was able to decode them within a matter of minutes. The following is an excerpt from just one of the letters she decoded.
Why do you think he did this? First off, he couldn't ever harm a fly. Also, I was talking to him on video chat all morning on my birthday. Also, I personally checked when his ex was attacked, and the times I talked to him don't make any sense. If you say he did it, did you see the attacker? Yes. Body size different. Nose, head, moving. A totally different person. Also, beard is too thick.
Ultimately, the state alleged that Joseph Merlino was attempting to provide responses for his loved ones to use whenever they were questioned by law enforcement, essentially asking his family to help him create a fake alibi regarding where he was the night Ellie Tran was murdered. In addition, Merlino apparently asked his loved ones to create fake email accounts, chat logs, and even coach them how to testify in court. It also allegedly even tried to hire someone to Photoshop some of these images to help better sell the lie.
Make sure the graphic designer sends you the completed conversation, like you took the screenshot yourself, like the deer picture you sent me. Make sure to double-check everything for mistakes, like timestamps, and compare it to another WeChat conversation. Also, ask my brother to check everything.
The state also alleged that Joseph Merlino had commissioned another inmate to send out letters and outgoing phone calls to communicate with family members on the outside, and that he'd even been brazen enough to set up a P.O. box in Norfolk, Virginia in the process. At one point during trial, defendant Joseph Merlino refused to come out of his holding cell until he was provided Gatorade by the jail staff, which ultimately delayed the proceedings yet again. Only adding to the theatrics of the case, the defendant also chose to take the stand in his own defense. He testified for over an hour and a half, which just so happened to be the exact amount of time it took a jury to return with their verdict. After a four-day trial, Joseph Vincent Merlino III was found guilty of first-degree murder on June 22, 2018. Ellie Tran's older sister had traveled from Vietnam to be with her family, and just 2 days before her death, she found out that Ellie had applied for sponsorship of her two siblings, and was also in the process of helping them relocate to the United States so they could all be together again. After a minor struggle at the Vietnam embassy, Ellie's sister's visitor's visa was approved and she was able to attend the funeral as well as the court proceedings. She spoke with the local media outside of the courthouse at the conclusion of the trial. And while she was grateful for a guilty verdict, Ellie's sister touched briefly on the American criminal justice system and how she believed it failed Ellie when Joseph Merlino was still allowed to walk free following the numerous attacks, restraining orders, and overall lengthy history of domestic violence.
Ellie's my poor sister.
Yeah,
at the American laws. And that's what we believe. Thank you so much to say my deeply appreciated from my family to the judge, to the prosecutor, attorneys, to the detective for their very hard-working long-time day and for the very, very great grand jury that helped us during the course.
She went on to speak about her niece, and how every time she looks into the young girl's eyes, she sees her sister.
It is a very, very broken heart. And we miss him, our Ellie, every day. Whenever I look into my niece, my Ellie's will come to us. She's a sister that I will remember every day, all my life. That keep me broken heart.
Ellie's sister also shared the difficulties the family faces moving forward, given that she was only in America on a temporary visa. She also spoke briefly about her niece and how Ellie's daughter struggles to sleep through the night with her mother no longer present.
How can I take care of her when I live far, half earth from America? It's very difficult for me to come with them, you know. That's Jolie and my mom and daddy here. Whenever she wake up at the midnight, she keep looking for me. If I still with her in the bed or not, because she has experience when I leave her late at night and she wake up early in the next morning, she cannot find me. So whenever she woke up and she keep looking for me.
Just found Joseph Berlino guilty of first-degree murder.
The jury saying there is sufficient evidence he killed his ex-girlfriend with cyanide on Valentine's Day.
Days after he was found guilty for the murder of his estranged wife, Ellie Tran, Joseph Berlino was interviewed from jail by a local news outlet, where he again expressed his dissatisfaction, this time with a guilty verdict.
It was a huge, huge mistake for justice. And the wrong person sitting right now, and Joe. No evidence linking me to anything.
He went on to discuss his hunger strike, which by this point had been ongoing for over 2 months. He was also sure to blame the sheriff and jail staff for not properly accommodating him while he was refusing to eat.
He's not doing any checks on me, okay? He canceled all that. So does he really care about someone's health? No, he cares about his own philosophy in the matter that we're subjects to him.
When asked why he was on a hunger strike, Merlino failed to provide a definitive rationale, offering only the ambiguous explanation that he was, quote, sticking up for his beliefs. What those beliefs were exactly, no one seemed to know. Regardless, the now convicted murderer wanted to make it crystal clear to the media that he was not refusing to eat as a means of committing suicide. In fact, the very same morning Merlino participated in this jailhouse interview, a judge had already rejected a petition filed by the Virginia Beach Sheriff's Office, which would have allowed them to force-feed Merlino while under their care. When the judge denied this request for some reason, Merlino saw it as a big win.
It's a huge victory, not only for me, but people that are standing up for their philosophies and what they actually believe in the matter. If I wanted to die, if I wanted to kill myself, that's what they claim, I would stop drinking entirely.
When asked if he had ever intended to eat again, this was Joseph Merlino's response.
We'll find out. I mean, we'll tell us, you know, tell it as it goes along. But the point is, eating isn't the point here, okay? It's violations, okay? Someone's violation.
For the entirety of his hunger strike, Joseph Merlino demanded Gatorade, which was essentially his life source along with bottled water. During that period, it was all he consumed. When asked about Joseph Merlino's antics behind bars, Sheriff Ken Stolle told reporters just how ludicrous it was to comply with any of the inmates' requests, considering the fact that he'd already managed to cost taxpayers a whopping $100,000 in total resources since the day he was arrested. Now, of course, all of that money wasn't spent on Gatorade, but some of it was, and the majority of those costs came from funding around-the-clock medical staff, as well as the several deputies who checked in on Merlino every 15 minutes to ensure he was still alive. Sheriff Stolle also told the media that, given the judge's denial allowing them to force-feed Merlino, his department was no longer going to put up with the nonsense. In other words, no more electrolytes and bottled water.
And I don't have the resources to maintain that. And it's not fair. It's not fair to the public to spend their dollars on somebody that wants to cause these problems.
Coincidentally, after Merlino stopped receiving the Gatorade, he ended his hunger strike on July 4th, 2018. However, that didn't mean he was finished with his attention-seeking behavior. Not by any stretch. Feeling now that he was inadequately represented at his own trial, Merlino decided to fire both of his attorneys, claiming they were ineffective by means of withholding evidence, and that they'd refused to visit him while in jail to discuss his case. The day before sentencing, Joseph Merlino requested to speak with local news outlet WTKR Virginia. Aside from his interview during the hunger strike, the now convicted killer had refused all media requests. Until now. It's unclear what he stood to gain from this interview, but for some reason he felt it was imperative to proclaim his innocence once more on public television before learning his fate the next day in court.
We weren't divorced or anything like that. There was really nothing bad going between us. We just had a few disagreements. It just puzzles me that nowadays someone can be prosecuted when they're not ready. I've been reading a lot of case laws and keeping my mind busy with that, and that from what I'm reading, it should be an automatic reversal of a new trial. So I do believe that this will be vacated and hopefully remanded for new trial, a worst case scenario.
Despite his newfound and unwarranted sense of confidence and believing his murder conviction would likely be overturned, Merlino was sentenced the following morning on December 5th, 2018. However, when that morning came, the defendant was pushed into the courtroom in a wheelchair while foaming at the mouth.
Joseph Merlino looked very sick this morning. He actually showed up to the courtroom in a wheelchair, and he couldn't stop coughing and making noises.
Throughout the hearing, Joseph Merlino was nonverbal, twitched constantly, and his eyes remained closed. While draped in a blanket, he convulsed from his wheelchair. The state, of course, alleged that this was all an elaborate scheme and that the defendant was simply pulling another stunt to delay the inevitable, to buy himself even more time. A jail doctor testified at what was supposed to be Merlino's sentencing, explaining that Joseph Merlino had no prior medical conditions that would be consistent with the symptoms he was now exhibiting in the courtroom. The doctor also noted that the defendant only began showing the symptoms that very morning, right before he was wheeled into court. To Merlino's slight benefit, however, the doctor suggested that this behavior could be the result of extreme stress. Ultimately, though, it appeared as though Joseph Merlino had achieved exactly what he had set out to do, as the judge postponed the proceedings. Sentencing was then rescheduled to resume the following week. Once Joseph Merlino was back in the courtroom, he had miraculously been cured of all seizures and was no longer drooling. He also walked in on his own 2 feet. At this, now his second sentencing hearing, documents provided from jail staff revealed that at 6:45 a.m. the morning of December 5th, Merlino was awoken in his cell by a sheriff's deputy and was told to get dressed for a sentencing. His first sentencing, that is. Merlino reportedly responded to the deputy by saying that he didn't have court that day and that his sentencing had been pushed back. At the time, Merlino showed no signs of distress and appeared to be in perfect physical health. However, just minutes later at 7:06 a.m., jail staff witnessed him hanging a bedsheet to obstruct the surveillance camera's view into his cell, something Merlino would later claim was common practice for him while using the bathroom for the sake of privacy. During sentencing, Merlino sat expressionless in the courtroom as the judge heard even more details about the morning of December 5th. According to court documents, at 7:25 the morning of his first hearing, the deputy entered the defendant's cell to transport him to the Virginia Beach courthouse, only to find him lying on the floor of his jail cell, now unresponsive. The deputy also located a plastic bag that contained a juice powder, water, and a straw in Merlino's jail cell, a homemade concoction which was believed to be the foam later seen emitting from the side of Merlino's mouth in court that very same morning. 5 hours after he was wheeled out of the courtroom that day and his hearing now postponed, Merlino was seen walking around freely in his jail cell, no longer foaming at the mouth and in seemingly perfect health. After this new evidence was heard, the defense reiterated its plea of a hopeful 20 to 34 year sentence for Joseph Merlino. Merlino himself lashed out when it was his time to speak, blaming seemingly everyone but himself for the situation he now found himself in. He then messily produced a folder containing several handwritten sheets of yellow loose-leaf paper and began rambling on about his future appeals. The judge immediately reprimanded Merlino and informed him that his collection of yellow papers was not relevant to the sentencing at hand. Merlino then requested the judge postpone sentencing once again until he could hire a new defense team. But just like Sheriff Ken Stolle admits the Gatorade crisis, the judge had had enough. And on Monday, December 10th, 2018, 31-year-old Joseph Merlino was officially sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, and was also ordered to pay a $100,000 fine. The same day Merlino was told he would effectively be spending the rest of his life behind bars, he spoke with the local media one last time from behind that plexiglass partition.
I didn't do it, what they're accusing me of, and they haven't even proved it. I'm not only hoping to get my name cleared, I'm hoping that this insidious justice that has been brought over these past 2 years won't fall into someone else's hands. And hopefully I can get some case laws out of it under my name.
Merlino also had some last words for his attorneys who he had recently fired.
No, they weren't on my side, and I can prove it. I can prove they weren't on my side.
When asked about the seizure he had allegedly suffered in court just a few days before, Merlino had this to say.
Why wouldn't I fake it today? It doesn't make any sense.
He is right about one thing. It absolutely makes zero sense. And help clear up some of that general confusion, specifically when it came to housing Joseph Merlino as an inmate, we were fortunate enough to speak with two very well-established members of Virginia Beach law enforcement, spokesperson Kathy Hyatt and Sheriff Rocky Holcomb.
My name is Kathy Hyatt, and I'm a communications consultant for the Virginia Beach Sheriff's Office.
And my name is Rocky Holcomb, and I am the Sheriff of Virginia Beach.
After 13 years of serving the department, Sheriff Ken Stolle, who was active at the time this crime was committed, retired in the fall of 2023. When he did, he passed the torch on to Rocky Holcomb, who was his right-hand man at the time Joseph Merlino was under their care at the Virginia Beach Correctional Center. Back then, Rocky Holcomb was a captain for the Criminal Intelligence Unit before becoming chief deputy and essentially ran the jail. A large portion of Kathy Hyatt's day-to-day responsibilities included handling all media-based inquiries related to the inmates, the majority of which were in reference to Joseph Merlino. We reached out to Sheriff Holcomb and Kathy Hyatt in hopes of gaining some additional perspective on what it was actually like inside of that jail, and how they dealt with an individual who simply refused to eat for nearly 80 days while housed in their facility.
We have had inmates go on hunger strikes, but it usually lasts no more than 15 to 20 days, but he lingered on quite a bit.
Sheriff Holcomb also told us that he isn't so sure Joseph Merlino was actually living strictly off of Gatorade and bottled water as he'd claimed. To this day, he thinks he may have been obtaining food here and there by other sources, while keeping up with the charade that he'd effectively been fasting for nearly 3 months.
My guess is, if I remember correctly from our investigations then, he wasn't completely morsel-free. In other words, I think that there was some food being slipped to him by the trustees and other inmates. So, I mean, to think about it reasonably, just on Gatorade and water, I don't know that you could even go 79 days without having a morsel. This guy was a big-time manipulator. So if he says, I didn't eat anything for 79 to 80 days, you may not have eaten anything in our presence or anything that we can document, but what did you sneak behind the curtain when nobody was watching?
In terms of why Merlino was even on a hunger strike in the first place, spokesperson Kathy Hyatt revealed a fascinating theory, something we hadn't actually considered, but that was shared within the department at the time.
This incident was caught on camera because the victim, Ellie Tran, lived with her parents and they had installed cameras because they'd had incidents with Mr. Merlino and were concerned for their safety. And so one of the theories that was floated was that he was possibly going on this hunger strike to change his appearance before his jury trial in order to try and say that this was not him. Because throughout the 79 days that he was on hunger strike, he did lose about 40 pounds. So he went down to about 112 pounds. I mean, he wasn't a big guy to start with. So that was one of the theories we, you know, that had been floated. But trying to understand his motives would be kind of an exercise in futility.
Sheriff Holcomb went on to explain his thoughts on the death penalty, recalling the strange irony between the legality of capital punishment and the judge's denial to allow them to force feed Merlino for the sake of his own survival.
At that time, we still had the death penalty in Virginia. So the courts can order you to death, but they can't order you to stay alive. And we felt like that was a true conflict there, that we can get a court order that says you're sentenced to death, but we can't get a court order that says we're allowed to force feed you and keep you alive. And we just felt like that was a little strange. Because, you know, here's the thing. If an inmate passes away in our custody, then that's our responsibility. And whether it be by overdose, by hanging, or starvation, It's our job to make sure you make it before the judge to have your case heard. And so that was our point the whole way, is we're not going to let this man wither away to nothing in here and be responsible for his death.
Albeit not in the least bit surprising, it was interesting to hear that Joseph Merlino was extremely manipulative even when it came to the media, and that he'd often cancel on journalists at the last minute, some who had driven over an hour just to come speak with him.
It was a total pump fake. Yeah, I'll talk to him. And then we get everything set up and he goes, no, I'm not talking. So you don't know what's real, what's not.
We were also informed of the tasty dish that ultimately ended Joseph Merlino's hunger strike altogether.
Our staff kitchen always does like a special meal for inmates on holidays. So his trial had ended, it was the 4th of July, and our staff kitchen had made like a barbecue chicken meal. So whatever his higher reasoning was apparently faded in light of that chicken lunch. So
after countless resources, time, and energy spent, both spokesperson Kathy Hyatt and Sheriff Holcomb told us that they're extremely proud of how their department handled the situation, explaining that at the end of the day, they were simply doing their jobs.
The men and women that work in this profession of law enforcement and corrections, we're not here to cast judgment. We're not here to be the judge or the jury. We're just here to make sure that justice is served and the individual gets to where they need to be, in front of the judge, to the penitentiary. But the men and women that do this job, we're humans too. And we got to understand that the Tran family is dealing with a terrible situation here. I mean, this lady was ejected with cyanide, and it goes on to the courts prove that this gentleman's received a life sentence. But we don't take any of that into consideration. We just do our job.
We kept him alive and we got him to trial so that there could be justice for the Tran family. And I'm really proud that we were able to do that and that none of these games were effective.
Custody of Ellie Tran's daughter was ultimately awarded to the maternal grandparents. And the family's GoFundMe to help with funeral expenses as well as other general affairs raised just shy of $9,000 and has since been closed. On the basis of abuse and neglect, a permanent protection order was also placed against the defendant, Joseph Merlino, on behalf of his child, entered by the victim's family. However, Joseph Merlino filed an appeal to that protection order, which Virginia Beach Sheriff's Office spokesperson Kathy Hyatt says ultimately held up awarding any existing assets or part of the estate to his daughter and her grandparents, all of whom were already struggling financially.
The house that Ellie Tran's parents were living in and was at risk of going into foreclosure because they didn't have enough income to continue paying the mortgage. And, you know, the daughter was the received Ellie Tran's estate. And I know that, again, one of the things that came out in news coverage was that Joseph Merlino was fighting, you know, the daughter receiving or inheriting the estate. He thought he should be the guardian of that estate as her father, and that he was going to, you know, be found not guilty and go free and then get custody of his daughter and get the estate. But, you know, in the meantime, it continued to victimize this poor little girl and Ellie Tran's family, who were now, in addition to having lost their daughter in this horrible fashion, were now at risk of also losing their home. So, I mean, it was just kind of one thing after another.
It's clear that Joseph Merlino is just as self-centered as he was in the time leading up to Ellie Tran's murder, and that he continues to make the lives of her family members a living nightmare, even while behind bars. Both Kathy Hyatt and Sheriff Holcomb said that they've never encountered an inmate quite like Merlino before, and that even when the D.C. sniper was under their supervision and care after he'd been transferred to Virginia Beach before trial in the early 2000s, things ran more smoothly. But what made him unique above anything else was not his so-called affinity for Gatorade, nor was it his acting skills. Instead, it was the complete lack of empathy for the victim and the mother of his child.
We had pirates in our jail at one point, the Somali pirates who had hijacked some of the container ships. We had the DC sniper in our custody. So we've had all kinds of people and we treat them all the same. They're all humans. But, you know, I think one of the things that stuck out in watching even just the trial coverage and dealing with him is at no point did he show any empathy or remorse for Ellie Tran or his daughter. You know, it was always about him.
At the conclusion of our interview, we seem to have landed on a mutual common ground. While Joseph Merlino's antics were absurd and are most certainly part of this case, it's crucial we not lose our focus on what's most important in the midst of that chaos. And that is the fact that an innocent 35-year-old mother needlessly and horrifically lost her life at the hands of the man who fathered her daughter.
And can you imagine poor Ellie standing there thinking she's been injected with God knows what? And you could almost just see her like, what the heck? What's happened here? And how evil is that? It breaks my heart. Breaks my heart for that family and that young child.
I mean, and I think about that, you know, the children in situations like this, because she lost her mother in this horrible fashion and she's got this father who's convicted of committing this horrible crime and will be in prison for life. And what a horrible truth and reality to be burdened with.
We can only hope that Ellie's daughter finds comfort in the care of her two loving grandparents, along with her extended family as she grows older. Joseph Merlino continues to scribble in his yellow notebook and study law from a prison cell, and will continue to do so until all of his appeals are effectively exhausted. He's currently serving out his life sentence as an inmate at the River North Correctional Center in Grayson County, Virginia, where the fine Commonwealth taxpayers will no longer be footing the bill for his Gatorade.